Welcome to Profiling Criminal Minds. I'm Dan.
Dr. Redmond.
And we are going to start off with our fond farewell to Derek Morgan. That's right. It's the three episodes about exiting Shamar Moore from the show to go off and appear on a remake of SWAT. He's playing the Robert Urich part, right?
Yeah.
He's the star?
Yeah. Of course.
Why would I even ask? You're right. In his SWAT remake. So that's I'm glad he found his own show. I'm glad it worked out well for him, but let's just say his exit from the show isn't particularly elegant. And we'll get to why we would say that as we go forward. All right, so starting from the start, the episode is, I believe it's called Derek.
Yes.
Yeah, they do like episodes that are just named after the character when they're doing their big dramatic thing, don't they?
I don't know.
What was the Emily one? Because the Emily one wasn't called Emily. It was called whatever her fake undercover name was.
Yeah.
Which I'm blanking on right now. But yeah, they do love doing
that. Lauren.
Lauren. Yeah, the episode was called Lauren. Thank you.
Yeah.
All right, let's go for it.
When a group of international mercenaries for hire abduct Morgan, the BAU sets out to rescue their missing colleague. Meanwhile, Morgan hallucinates about his father, Hank, as he disassociates his mind from the pain his captors are inflicting on him.
Yeah. All right. So, not a bad use of meanwhile. Just a little note to the person who wrote that synopsis. A mercenary is by definition for hire.
Yes.
That's what makes them a mercenary. They're a soldier that anybody can hire rather than one who works for a cause.
Yeah, you can call it soldiers for hire, but
you can call it soldier for a mercenary is a soldier of fortune. It's right there in the name mercenary. That's what it means. Anyway, that is such an unimportant thing.
Quibble.
No, that is in many ways the ultimate quibble, and I am happy to admit that. So let's
Although,
move on.
Who knows how many people actually understand that in the word mercenary these days? I have,
you're right. I mean, maybe it's not as common
these days. Never mind. Let's get to Derek.
Yes, let's. So they have kidnapped him. They brought him into a cabin in the woods of Virginia, and the show does. Like, I gotta say, the centerpiece of this episode is scenes with him and Danny Glover. Uh-huh. And it is really distracting that his dad is played by Danny Glover. I mean, I'm not saying Danny Glover does a bad job, but it's like, Danny Glover is very famous. And to have, like, and it raises this question where it's like, if you were playing a character on the show, right? That would be one thing. But he's not playing a character on the show. He's playing what Derek Morgan imagines his dad would look like had he gotten the chance to age normally. Right? And that creates the impression that Derek Morgan, like, is a big fan of Danny Glover.
Oh, you should hear the commentary.
Okay, he is. Because the thing is...
You should hear him talk about Danny Glover, and he actually talks about his own personal life, right?
Right.
And about how his father, I guess, left, and so his uncle actually is his mother's. So his mother was white, his father was black, and his mother
he says that more than once
in the show.
Yeah.
In the commentary, and then he talks about Danny Glover and how they didn't know whether he would be willing to do it because he was such a big guy. And
he's so good in this episode.
And Morgan and so Shamar Moore is talking about how wonderful it was and how he talked to him three or four times discussing the character, etc.
Yeah.
And he said it was so good, and he said he made him feel so comfortable on the set. It brought out the best of him and his acting ability. And then, you know, he talked about...
Sorry, just before we say anything else, I just want to say that, like, this is a series high for Shamar Moore.
This
up
was...
there with Profiler Profiled. Like, if you just watch those two episodes, for Shamar Moore's like growth as an actor, because he's really good in both, but he's even better here than he was there.
Oh yeah, he's and he so talks incredible. About that. He talks about his growth here, and then he talks about how, you know, like apparently Danny Glover gave him a hug, and it felt so good. And
oh my god!
It was almost like he was like he was like a father substitute.
No, maybe I will tell you what it
just
is
because. Yeah,
I will tell you my theory, because you look at how old Shamar Moore is, right? Mm-hmm. And so you have to assume his dad left when he was young, I assume. Mm-hmm. And yeah, he was raised by his white mother and, you know, the main paternal influence in your life was his, as you say, his white uncle. And I have to assume, and this is why it was so distracting for me when I'm watching it, and now that you tell me that, this is definitely the case for the character and for
Shamar Moore,
is that both the character and Shamar saw Lethal Weapon and thought that this is what black fatherhood should look like.
Yes.
Like this great, completely reliable, wonderful family man who's a cop, who's reliable. And that's the thing. And it's like, so when he's making the episode, he's like, what is the greatest influence? Like, he's lost his father. What would he like the replacement of his father to be? And then he saw the movie Lethal Weapon and he's like, Roger Murtaugh.
Yeah.
And that is who I wish that's who he imagined his absent father to be. So of course he imagined it. And that makes me so happy that I profiled him correctly, because that's why he's in the episode.
Oh yeah. No. He talks about this, how, and they didn't know whether he would be willing to do it, but he read the script and he didn't have a problem with doing it. In fact, he was really, and he was engaged fully with the character and everything else.
That makes me
which
so happy.
I assume Danny Glover would have been.
Of course.
You know, and I think, yes, I mean, this episode, but it was so funny. I watched all of the episodes through and then I listened to the two commentaries.
Okay.
But this one was just Shamar Moore talking for 42 minutes.
Yeah, of course. Because, I mean, it's his last showcase episode.
Yeah, and
it's a farewell to the show from Breen Fraser.
And Breen Fraser wrote it, and he was complimenting him all over the place, but he was saying they talked about, you know, the business that apparently Breen was talking about how in the beginning of the script and the rest of it, there were things that Shamar Moore said, no, you can't do. And
really?
Apparently, yeah. Shamar Moore nixed this idea. They wanted to have one of the scenes. Like, you know when Penelope comes in?
Yeah.
And Breen Fraser, well, the writing room, I guess, and Erica, I guess. There were a couple of things that Erica wanted to do that, I guess, because it was Shamar Moore's last 3 episodes, they must have given in. Or the people on high said, and one of them was that they wanted sort of Penelope and Derek to have a kiss, right? And
in his fantasy.
In one of his fantasies.
Yeah, when she shows up to help, right?
You see, but they and Breen agreed fully with Shamar Moore, because Breen's looking. When this show ends, I'm sure he'll end up on.
Wouldn't surprise me if he turned up on the staff of SWAT.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me in the least, because that was the one thing you get out of this whole commentary is just Derek is a corporate actor.
Yeah.
Holy shit. He didn't say one wrong thing. Not one. Like, and his praise of Thomas Gibson, given that he did that shitty thing after Gibson was fired.
It is weird that, like, he would be praising Thomas Gibson so much when he was a real dick about Thomas Gibson's departure just 4 months later.
Yeah, and I will tell you that he was praising him up and down. Well, yes, but he knows which side. Shamar Moore knows where the butter is.
Yeah. He knows who he's working for, and he's working for CBS. And he has been, and this is crazy that you pointed out, he has been working for CBS nonstop for over 20 years.
Yeah, there was some music show that he was the third permanent host for.
And then he got a soap opera.
No, it all seems to be around the same time.
The same time, okay.
Like, and it's funny, all the shows that he was in when he first got, like... You know, just one episode, right? So he would have been.
Yeah, of course. He was just a regular working actor.
Yeah, until he got.
until he got the soap opera, and then he was very popular in the soap opera.
Yeah, and so that.
And then he transitioned from there to Criminal Minds.
Yeah, and he says nothing about Criminal Minds. That's not what made him leave at all. He just needed to leave because it gave me the lifestyle I have now, and aww, I will be forever grateful. He was just praising.
He sounds so charming too.
You'll have to listen to
it. No, I'm definitely going to listen to this commentary.
You've
got the DVDs. You'll lend them to me. Yeah, it's fantastic.
I'll lend them to you. But it was the weirdest thing to listen to. But the Danny Glover stuff was really weird. And he said it was just, and so he and Breen were talking about, maybe. But it was Shamar Moore that said no. He said, sure, the fans would love it, but no. Because, of course, all he has to focus on is Savannah and the baby, because he's figured out that there's going to be a baby, because, of course, Danny Glover says, well, if it's a good thing, what? And that's how he keeps riffing on and on about how this is what he wants.
Right? Yeah.
But this was, of the three episodes, this is the best one.
Oh, by far.
And this is really actually quite a good episode.
I mean, the thing is, because of its focus and because it's just two really good performances, mm-hmm, it's safe to say that I would probably call this, we're going to come away. We had a hard time talking about it earlier. And we're probably going to come away saying this is the best episode of the season.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
that's a low bar. That's damning with faint praise, but it's still true that this is probably the best episode of the season.
Probably one of the best episodes of the last couple of years, you know.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it really is good. And what I love most about it is it's one of those times where they get really into the details of the different way children process molestation and abuse. Because the idea that he completely disassociated himself as a child. Right. And he
created this wonderful world.
Yeah. He created a permanent fishing trip with his father.
Yeah.
You know, and whenever something was going, whenever these horrible things were happening to them in his head, he was on that permanent fishing trip with his father. And it's tragic and it's beautiful and it's so good. Yeah. And the way the show treats it is like, this is just how kids cope.
Mm hmm.
Fundamentally, and that's just true. They can create, and some people create alternate personalities in that headspace.
But it happened to him when he was older. This is what I always say. You have to have...
When you're incredibly young and don't have a solid personality.
Yeah, when the sort of personality is creating, I hate to say itself, but you know what I mean?
No. When your personality is being built out, that's not a bad description of it at all.
Yeah. And so, you know, I mean,
to get DID, but this whole idea of creating a headspace where your conscious mind goes, right? To keep yourself safe. That is completely accurate to how people react to this type of trauma.
Shamar Moore,
a good way to show it.
Lord, I mean, in this episode, as you say, when you go back to the original episode that dealt with this, you just go, he really could pull out all the stops for this.
Yeah.
And in many ways, I'm going, well, yeah, you should have pulled to Maryland and tried to go back to the theater or something if you really wanted to grow as an actor. But that's another story.
We're not going to criticize his career choices. The man always made a good living, you know.
Yes, and SWAT is doing. I've never watched an episode, so I can't even comment on it. I'm just assuming that it's just that his.
They wouldn't be four seasons in if it wasn't doing well, and I hope he is finding more dramatic satisfaction working on SWAT than he did on most of Criminal Minds.
We can hope. We don't know.
We can only hope. No, we don't know. And we can check it out at some point.
And my suspicion is that he just took Derek and moved him over to SWAT.
That wouldn't shock me if that was... That would not shock me if he had just going back to the well for his SWAT performance. But of course, we can't say that because we haven't seen the show.
You know, I mean, it's... well, it's the nature of the TV business too. Absolutely. Like I can't, sometimes you can't even blame actors, you know?
No, I mean, well, I think far more than in movies, although it happens to movies to a certain extent, yeah. The idea in television is because people are inviting an actor into their home every week, they become really comfortable with a persona, right? And the kind of person somebody's playing. And so it's very, so when someone goes from show to show, well, you still want them to be playing that kind of part and having that kind of persona. Look at the, you know, 5 shows Matthew Perry did after Friends, and except for Studio 60, he's basically just doing Matthew Perry, like the Matthew Perry persona people like. And most actors do this. It's only someone like Ted Danson who will amazingly have 3 giant hit, you know, popular shows where he's playing completely different characters every time.
Yep.
And I've never seen an episode of Becker, but people have told me that he is completely different from Sam Malone and completely different from Michael in The Good Place. But yeah, it's like, rare.
Michael in The Good Place, jeez.
Oh, no, it's a fantastic performance. And if they, and I will tell you this, and I'm not going to make a big thing out of this, but it's like, if those idiots had nominated him for, supporting actor instead of actor, he would have won a bunch of those Emmys instead of losing them to people.
Yeah.
Because I don't think it's a flashy enough part to win them. But yeah, that's just us talking about TV. To get back to Shamar Moore.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm so glad. No, I am so glad that it's like the Danny Glover thing was his request. And it's like, because it so fits in with who we know him to be. Like, it so fits in with what we know about Derek and the kind of person Derek is. And just idolizing his absent father. And, oh my God, them even tying in that damn King Arthur stuff again. One more time. Oh, one more time getting that King Arthur stuff in there. You little monsters.
Apparently just about all sorts of people showed up for the taping of this, like when they were filming this.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I can't remember who the first one. He did say even Ed Bernero dropped by. But somebody else dropped by. I can't remember who. Oh, Simon Mirren dropped by.
Really?
It turns out that Simon Mirren was the go-to person to write Derek's character.
Huh.
Yeah.
But that's a surprise. That's as surprising as I've heard. But well, way to go, Simon Mirren dropping by for that. Maybe he tweets dropped, something. But yeah, like
by, as I said, and Bernero dropped by, and apparently Gibson sweated his way through directing this to make sure that everything was absolutely perfect.
Oh, it's a great looking episode, and I will say,
unbelievable.
Well, no, I don't what I know loved about this episode.
Camera work.
No, it was fantastic. So we were talking in this past season, we had the episode with the bikers wanting to kill 2 of the profilers in a very stupid episode. Mm-hmm. Right. And there is this ridiculous scene at the end of the episode where they have a gunfight with 4 bikers and it turns into kind of a ridiculous action movie scene that doesn't feel like Criminal Minds at all. And it's all incredibly choreographed. And it's like, am I suddenly watching 24? You know, like what is this show become? This is not what I come to Criminal Minds for. And this episode, by comparison, has a scene like that, but it is a scene that is Derek killing 6 guys that still manages to feel like it belongs in the world of Criminal Minds. If you know what I'm saying.
No, for sure.
Yeah, like, because it's, again, shot with much more restraint.
Yeah.
It's shot with far more restraint than the scene in the other episode. But beyond that, like, it is shot with more restraint, and it feels more, it's over so quickly. Like, the action, there's only 2 bits of action. He grabs a guy, he clubs him, he grabs his gun, he wildly shoots a bunch of people, and then he flees. Jumps out a window, the guys think they have him cornered, and then he shoots the 2 remaining guys. Like, it is literally, like, just this incredibly short, brutal action that is surprising and disorienting. And it doesn't feel precise and choreographed and like it's showing off. Yeah. And I really liked I really liked the action scene in this episode.
Oh, yeah. I watched that episode, and I mean, and I'm glad I just watched it, and went on to the next two episodes before I listened to the commentaries.
Yeah, of course.
But the episode itself, and the scenes, you know, with Derek being his usual, what can we say?
That's a nice way to say this.
His usual.
Well, I won't say insufferable.
He called himself an alpha male in the.
Oh my God! Seriously?
Yes, he did.
God damn it, Shamar.
Yeah, just you want to know another reason. Okay, this was something Dan and I discussed before.
We're not going to talk about it on the show.
We're not talking on the show.
Because we are not looking to get sued. But he called himself an alpha male?
He called himself the alpha male, or Derek was an alpha male, you know. and I'm not sure. I tell you, I finished the commentary.
Well, no, but I mean, the thing is.
I sued them. Do they know who's who? Because sometimes he made the mistake.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
He's talking about himself when he is so invested so much of his persona into Derek.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I know, but I mean, we've talked about before about how Derek Morgan is toxic masculinity. Like, mm-hmm. that's our catchphrase for the character. Derek Morgan mm-hmm. is toxic masculinity. And the whole concept of there being an alpha male is where that fits in. Like, the existence of that concept, it's all right there in toxic masculinity. So it's good to know that Derek is Derek and Shamar really do like live up to that reputation.
You know, when he's trying to sidestep and sweet talk Savannah hallucinations, right? Oh, and by the way, Ann Garcia did get her alpha male in the end, though. And yeah, called it.
I mean, and no, you did call it. I mean, and that's the thing you said, because on some level we had said that. It's like, is that what Luke is there for? To be a, so that Garcia can finally get Derek, because he's so obviously the replacement for Derek.
For Derek,
in every way.
Yeah.
But we'll talk about that next season, about how much Luke just slides into that role.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Because fundamentally, like, there's not a lot to talk about the quote-unquote mystery this week, because literally they just trace a cell phone. Like, that's all that happens this week.
Well, he manages to get that sat phone, and they can travel, and they can trace it.
That's what I'm saying. Like, they know where he was kidnapped. Well, yeah, but they know exactly where he was when he was kidnapped, because they have his cell phone record. And they noticed that at that time, another cell phone, right, that there was a satellite phone signal on in the same area that's not traceable because it was satellite phone. And so then Derek manages to make another phone call. And so they just track the satellite phone signal and fly over there in a helicopter. Like, it's not there's no investigation here. They literally just track a cell phone.
Yeah. And only because Derek manages to finally get it, turn it on. And then the guy at the other end answers it, which is what allows them to completely pinpoint.
Oh, yeah. But of course, I mean, it completely makes sense that he would answer it because he would think it was his partner.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, no. So, no. Like, but I mean, I'm just saying, it's like there's nothing really to talk about in how they investigate the crime, because there's no investigation. He just makes a phone call. You know?
Well, yeah. And they do their basic sort of discussion and whatever, you know, so that they do find
the funny part is,
but
like, they completely figure it all out.
Yeah.
But that's not relevant to how they solve it or catch them. Like, they figure out who's involved through, you know,
and then they lock out the Lance computer Henderson. Goes beep, beep, beep.
Beep. Oh, look.
And Alvin goes, look.
Yeah, because that's the funny part. All of their figuring out is totally unrelated to how they catch them. Because if they had figured that out and he hadn't made the phone call, they didn't have a lead.
No. Well, no, they had a general, yes, no, if he had never turned on the phone,
they never
heaven
would have
knows
found
if they would have caught him.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they might have caught the guys later. Derek definitely would have been dead. So Derek saved himself this time.
And that's always good.
No, it's always good when people save themselves.
I always talk about victims.
Oh, no, it's easier to cope with.
It's easier to cope with.
Yeah. And so they got this legit creepiness, right? Mm-hmm. Right, the legit creepiness of that horrible wound he gets of the white phosphorus.
Yes.
Oh, such a good bit of makeup.
Wasn't that a wonderful...
Ew.
Oh!
It's hard to look at. Like, they did a really good job with the makeup and the effect of it burning him. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, and so even in his hallucination, he feels it.
Oh, God, that little light effect when he was hallucinating. Wasn't that fun?
Yeah, and he tumbles over. No, it was very well done.
Oh, yeah.
That whole scene is very well done.
I was very happy with that sequence. But honestly, I'm very happy with the episode. Here's my only complaint about anyone's behavior in the episode. So at the end of the episode, you've got this scene you're watching where the guy shows up to finish Derek off.
Yeah.
And he's just going to kill him because, you know, he can. And he pins Derek's knife, hand to a table with a knife, which is, ew, hard to look at.
Yes, even when you know it's fake.
I know it's fake. It's hard to look at, though.
Yeah.
It's a hard thing to see. So you got that. So that's a ton of fun. But then, and this is the part that gets me, they walk in, right? And then even though the guy isn't, like, pointing a gun, he's not holding a knife to Derek's head, he's not doing anything, they just shoot this guy. And I'm like, do you not want to get information from him?
Well, let me put it this way. We'll discuss that part of, because that fits in with what happens in the third episode.
Yeah, too. I guess you're right.
Yeah. I mean, it fits. We can expand on that issue when we get to episode three.
You're right. But it reinforced my theory that I feel like maybe there's a solid chance that, maybe Reed was involved in this somehow, and he was trying to cover up his involvement by murdering that guy. Now, there's nothing in the text to support that interpretation. Any sane reading of the text would definitely be against that interpretation. Mm-hmm. But, I'm just putting it out there.
Okay, you are interpreting against the text.
Oh, absolutely I'm interpreting against the text. 100%. That is the opposite of what they intended. And I am totally admitting that is the opposite of what they intended. All right, so let's move on.
Okay. Yeah.
Let's move on to the second episode. But yeah, very, okay, so, very good, incredibly good Shamar, Derek Morgan episode. Yeah, very happy with how this episode wraps up.
If only they could have kept that going.
Yeah. Go.
Anyway, The Sandman, directed by Joe Mantegna.
Yeah.
The BAU celebrates Morgan's return from a 6-month leave of absence only to end the festivities when they are tasked with apprehending a serial killer who terrorizes families in Wichita, Kansas by abducting children while their parents are asleep. Meanwhile,
while their parents are dead, he murders the father and glues the mother's eyes shut to torture them. He doesn't grab children while their parents are asleep.
Yeah, I wasn't going to go there.
That's a really bad description. That is a really bad description of the episode. Please continue.
It should say after their parents are disabled.
Yeah, exactly.
I would have accepted that because he didn't want to kill the mothers.
No, he didn't, but he accidentally did.
The first one, yes. Yeah. Meanwhile, Morgan juggles identifying who was responsible for his attack and preparing for his child's birth.
Aww.
It actually is, I guess, juggling the two things, except that...
Well, he is kind of, yeah. No, he absolutely is. I don't think that's unfair.
Except that we don't know that he's juggling identifying who was responsible for his
attack. At the start of the episode, we do see him with the most lazily constructed evidence board ever. Like, we see the little Venn, like, there are Venn diagrams he has drawn, and it's as if someone who drew them had no idea what a Venn diagram was supposed to look like, or what information it was supposed to contain. Like, they'd heard that a Venn diagram involves overlapping circles, but then they just draw three overlapping circles and a bunch of names inside the overlapping part. And I'm like, that's not what a Venn diagram is.
Wasn't most of that though in the next episode?
No, that's this episode. They show him right at the start coming back to work and unfurling his evidence on the thing. That is all this episode.
Yeah.
The next episode is just him running around and doing stuff.
No. Okay.
Yeah, because remember, the next episode starts in the hospital. Like, there's no, she gets shot and he's in the hospital or talking with Lance Henriksen the entire episode, next episode. So yeah, the evidence board is this episode. I can say to a high degree of certainty, because, I mean, they also look at other evidence boards in next episode, but the scene with Derek looking at the evidence board. That's why you're confused.
Just with Derek.
Yeah.
Okay, so, yeah.
And yeah, him secretly working on the thing himself, that's
and then that. We find out that the whole team, except for Joe Mantegna, has been working on it.
By the way, I do like the idea that, I mean, we always talk about how Joe is not fantastic at his job. I do like the idea that everybody else was working on this case, but Joe Mantegna is just sitting at home smoking cigars.
And drinking wine.
And drinking wine and just having a grand old time while everyone else was, like, desperately trying to find the guys who kidnapped Derek. And Joe's just like, meh. David Rossi. When David Rossi goes home, his day is over. You know, like, he does not take work home with him, even if one of his closest friends has been kidnapped by murderers.
Mercenaries.
Oh, sorry, mercenaries. You're right. And we get into an episode where we learn just what a lazy director Joe Mantegna is. And I know this is me nitpicking, that's what I do from time to time, but I just want to remind everybody this episode is set in Kansas, and it's as if he's incapable of framing a shot without showing a mountain in the background. Like, it's the flattest state in America, and he's got mountains all over the place. Literally, all the man would have had to do is just point the camera down 20 degrees. But he can't be bothered. He's got cigars and red wine to get back to. And I know I'm now conflating David Rossi with Joe Mantegna, but that's not an accident.
All I can do is just laugh. I mean, this whole episode is it's what I would say here, right, is that you have it was after, I think it might have been better if they had just not bothered with the middle episode.
Yeah.
And just done Sandman. You know, or whatever, and done Sandman and then done Derek. Because one of the big things that I had a real problem with was that after what happened, why did he should have just, and his epiphany with Danny Glover, why should he have ever gone back to work?
I know. It doesn't make sense that he would go back to work. He could help the team find the thing, but why is he like getting on a plane and going on a case and blah 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 blah? Like, your whole thing is you've just figured out what you value in life, now suddenly you're just getting back on a plane and, you know, helping solve murders again. That's not like what you learned about yourself. It's flying in the face of everything,
you know. And it was weird, because I think that the idea might have been that because that this episode was the catalyst.
Yeah.
If this episode, and I'm watching it, and I was making that complaint in my head as I'm watching it, sort of, but I'm going, okay, well, maybe this is supposed to be the episode, the catalyst episode. As you can tell, I kind of forgotten.
Well, where it's like, so you're saying that he figured out that children can be in danger. So he's going to devote himself to looking after his kids.
Something like that. No, that he can't. It's too PTSD inducing and everything else now that he's going to have a family and the rest of it.
Yeah.
But they didn't go that way with this. No, we end up getting the next episode where, you know, the guy that hired the mercenaries for hire, you know, shoots his wife.
Yeah.
And I'm going,
yeah.
No, this episode just feels so out of place.
No, I agree with you.
From my perspective, I just.
They shouldn't have done another episode between Derek and Beautiful Disaster. I think I'm going to agree with you on that one. Like, just move this episode up. Don't have Derek or change it completely.
Yeah, so much so that this is one of those epiphanies, and he's going to tell Savannah like this, like he's trying to come retire, back to her.
Yeah, and he can't do it. You're right, because like nothing this week even gives him pause. Like, if they had used this episode to show that he can't, his head's not in the game anymore.
Yeah,
And he can't get it done because he's worried about his kid and he knows there's murders out there. One, and it's like, but no, like everything about this is a completely normal episode of Criminal Minds right up until Savannah gets shot.
Yeah. And then you have, of course, and you even have, it has to be Joe Mantegna who kills the evil, sad man.
Yeah.
And in this case, Joe did not murder him.
No. The guy came at him with a hammer.
With not only that, but what do they call those hammers? It's a particular type of hammer.
Yeah, the ball peen hammer with the...
Thank you, that's it.
Ball peen. The scary looking murder hammer. Yeah. Is how we like to think of it.
Yeah. So,
but yeah, it's I get it, but at the same time, like they still had him shoot him, but at the same time, it's like you're right. They should have used this as a way to like segue Derek off of the show more cleanly to show that his heart wasn't in it anymore and his head wasn't in it anymore.
Yeah, his heart isn't in it. He really can't do this anymore. That's what I was hoping they were going for. And then the icing on the cake is Savannah gets shot.
Yeah.
He goes to tell her, and as he's telling her, he's not going
to. That he's done.
He's done with. Like, I thought at the truck, that's what should have happened. He should have just said, Savannah, I'm ready to
be done with this. Yeah.
I can't do this anymore.
I'm going to be your full time. Yeah.
And then that would have made That would have made.
Leading into Beautiful Disaster.
Beautiful Disaster would have made a lot more sense.
I agree with you on that one.
You know?
It would have segued so much more naturally if he had decided to quit before she got shot, and that just hammers it home brutally.
Brutally, and you know, and also his whole brain being completely dissociated.
Oh yeah.
During this period, right?
Oh, totally.
So in Beautiful Disaster, it would have made a lot more sense. It was just they didn't segue it correctly. They could have, if they had just done that, right? This episode, particularly since it's about children and parents, right? I really think that maybe that's what they thought they were doing.
But that's not the episode we watched.
No.
It's just not. And that's too bad. Because that would have been a strong way to end it. And especially because the episode itself, the killer, it's just so there. What really bothered me is, so they learn relatively early on that they notice how strange it is that both crime scenes had a big ornate hourglass left in them. And they're like, that's strange. So they ask the family member, is that their hourglass or did the killer bring it? And the family member's like, the killer brought it. And then they're like, well, these aren't purchased. These are beautiful handmade hourglasses that the killer made locally, and he made them locally because the sand came from their local river, right? So like they have that information there, and so they know he's making them locally, and because he also used sand from upstate New York, they know he's not from the area normally. So my question is, why don't they say, is it easy to make an hourglass? I feel like it's not easy to make an hourglass. Like,
watched him making his hourglasses.
Like, and so the point is, don't you just have to say, like, shouldn't we just track down anybody who's buying the equipment to make hourglasses? Because giant glass blowing kilns or glass blowing furnaces don't grow on trees.
No, he's only been in Wichita for 6 weeks.
Exactly. Meaning he didn't bring that with him. He had to rent a place that already had a blast furnace, or he had to buy a blast furnace and have it installed there. So, like, why isn't their first thing, let's look to see if there's any places with blast furnaces that you could use to make these things?
Well, yeah, but here's the other thing, is that they're saying, well, there's no way to track down somebody who makes because
they're homemade. Hourglasses.
And yeah. I'm sitting here going, okay, it's 2016. I have a friend who makes glass things and sells them over the internet.
Yep.
How the hell did this guy make a living if he was so obsessed with making perfect hourglasses?
He's got to be selling them, right?
He's got to be selling them, and they have got to be ultra expensive because they're I mean, if you they saw are, that.
I gotta say, when I watched the episode, I was watching it on the big screen TV, and I'm like, those are beautiful hourglasses.
They are gorgeous. And then he was doing this thing with the colored liquidy things.
Oh, yeah. And he's
I guess
the
experimenting with a new way of doing
the hourglass. You know? And he's got the hourglasses with the ornate, like, metal lattice work all around both sides of the hourglass.
Yeah.
That come on a free gorgeous. Spinning spindle. I'm like, these are like $5,000 hourglasses he's making. Yeah,
he's got to be selling them, so they should have been able to track
him. Instead, absolutely.
They say, well, you know, he made, and I'm going, okay, well, oh, if he just made them in his basement. No, there should have been a market for these beautiful hourglasses.
I don't know why Garcia doesn't like look at the hourglasses and show them to community. It's like, do you know, oh yeah, here's a guy who works with things like that, and track him down that way. That doesn't immediately lead to where he is in the city, but it's like, it would help them zero in on where he is. Because the idea that he's got to be buying, I mean, unless he's only using local sand and making all of his own glass, which can, I mean, he might be
making his own glass, but
yeah, not buying like blocks of meltable glass, like meltable glass. It's a hard word to say, meltable, because you want to say multiple. Yes, but like buying the blanks that he then melts down and expands on. Right, mm-hmm. He might be actually like making his own glass from scratch, from like coke and sand. Right. So he might even be going that far, which would make them all the more expensive if he's even hand making the glass. Right.
Because he became completely
so obsessed with it. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. So after his abuse as a child.
And somebody in New York, he came from New York. So
someone would know it. But again, just the fact that he has got a blast furnace in Wichita, there can only be, I think I looked it up for my review, and it's like, there's only two places in all of Wichita, Kansas, where glassmaking is done. So there's no way those two people, at least one of them, wouldn't have heard of this guy.
Yeah, no, I mean, that was my feeling about that part of the story. But, you know, this was supposed to be a vehicle for Morgan's transitioning, and they did a poor job of it.
Yeah, because it doesn't connect. His character doesn't connect with it at all.
Yeah, the episode, was pretty good. And then
it's not a terrible episode. It's just there's a couple of things about it.
And the mother was actually very effective.
Oh, yeah.
And when she...
And it's like, again, talking about Joe's laziness as a director. So there's this scene where she's supposed to be like doing a recording for the news.
Yeah.
Right? Going out there. And it's just like, and the way they set that up is no lighting, no prep. JJ just puts like a digital video handy cam on a tripod in the room. I'm like, yeah, you would want a better quality camera for that, guys. You would want to bring the news down to do this. But I assume they were saving money and didn't want any more extras. But it's like, just so much of this episode they cheap out on. Because as I said, the like logically, they should have gone to meet some people from the glassblowing community to find out about this guy. But they don't do that. Like, there's so much they don't bother doing in this episode. And it's a little frustrating.
Well, and when you listen to Matthew Gray Gubel, I think they blew all their money on Derek.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. Well, they had a bunch of stuntmen in the episode, and they shot up some rooms, and they had to afford Danny Glover. Like, he can't have been cheap.
Cheap.
So, yeah, like a legit movie star almost never appears on their show. Because it's not like Brad Dourif, who's been the star of plenty of movies, but he's still just character actor Brad Dourif. Danny Glover is big
Danny
time.
Glover!
The star of major Hollywood motion pictures.
And he was making a movie in behind Echo Bay a few years ago.
That's true.
And he was staying at the same place that my next door neighbor was staying when she was... Anyway. And she...
It's a big deal when Danny Glover comes to town.
And she sort of smiled at him, but she didn't even talk to him.
Oh.
That's Sault Ste. Marie. We're very good.
You're very good with celebrities in Sault Ste. Marie.
Yeah,
fundamentally, it's just an episode to be the blank space between Derek and A Beautiful Disaster. And you know what I kind of adore about these episodes? Mm-hmm. the rest of the season and the beginning of next year will forget that 6 months passed between Derek and this episode.
Oh, yeah. And hey, what did I tell you?
I know, but I find it so funny because it's like 6 months passed. So theoretically, this episode is set in August or September. Yeah. And then the show just doesn't realize that happened.
Mm. Well, why would they?
Why would they? It's Criminal Minds. They don't keep tight timelines. No, but it's so funny because then in the final season, you get that scene where JJ is injured even worse than Derek is. And she's back the next week. And we all assumed, oh, well, 6 months have passed, right? Nope, it's literally the next week. She had a collapsed lung. She almost had her spine damaged. You know, she lost half her body's blood. She's back to work next week.
Oh, and I'm sitting here going, I know. This is not what we would call self-contained episodic show. This is supposed to be a continuing drama with all of these people, etc. So all you
there are supposed to be consequences.
Yes, and all you have to do, and it doesn't matter, is do what you did at the beginning of Sam Manuel while he was gone 6 months.
Yeah.
Because that's what it's going to take.
Yeah, I know. But and they should have done that in the last season, and they idiotically didn't. So I think we can move on, except to say that unusually bleak serial killer backstory this week.
Oh, it's terrible.
Oh my god, the story about the guy being brutally raped for hours and being forced to watch. Oh my god.
Yeah, it was. Yikes. This was brutal. And then his mother just.
Yeah.
Abandoning him. Terrible. The whole thing.
Yeah, like obviously you're mad at him for killing people, but worse, like more than usual, we're like, yeah, we get where he came from.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Yikes.
Can actually, yeah.
Yeah, it was a rough episode for that.
If it hadn't been in between. As I said, it might have had a little more punch if they'd had done something more around it and put it before Derek and just went from Derek to a beautiful disaster.
Yeah. But they had to get Savannah shot is the thing.
Well, yeah, so. But they could have put that at the okay, yeah, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, that's the problem. Yeah, because you have They want the cliffhanger of her getting shot when she's very pregnant and about to have a kid.
Yeah. So, okay. Yeah. I understand. I take why that back. To fix this episode. So.
Is it bad that I didn't recognize a bunch of the celebrities playing poker at David's place? You didn't either. Joe Walsh, I knew right away. Absolutely.
And then I thought, okay, that must be Bill Withers. Because of the comment that they make about the song, Ain't No Sunshine When You're Gone.
Yeah.
So I'm going, oh, that's Bill Withers then, obviously. But no, did I? And I barely didn't recognize Joe Walsh.
Yeah.
I had to look. It's not, the funny thing was, is when Joe Mantegna has his writer friends.
Yeah.
I recognized
all of them. We knew right away. Yeah.
But these guys, like Bill Withers, okay, that must be Bill Withers. But Joe Walsh has not aged well.
No, he's had not a rough life, but he wears his age.
Let me put it this way: he's it's sort of the Keith from the Rolling Stones.
Oh God, Keith Richards.
Keith Richards, yes.
Yeah, no, it's that kind of look. I agree with you on that one. All right, so
he's heavy, and Keith is just. Skinny.
Oh, yes. Skinny, rail thin. All right. So the episode ends. Savannah gets shot and we move straight into Beautiful Disaster. Read the synopsis. I just want to say the least visually impressive Matt Gubler episode ever.
He talks about that.
Oh, OK. Thank you. I'm glad he does. All right.
He knows that.
He knows.
When a crime boss, our hero,
Lance Anderson.
Lance Henriksen, with ties to the Hitman Network, targets the BAU, leaving the fates of Savannah and her baby hanging in the balance. The team sets out to take him down before he can fulfill a sinister vendetta aimed at one of their own. Who wrote this?
I know, right?
We all know it's Derek.
Yeah,
you don't have to be coy.
There's no reason to be coy. Savannah got shot. Who else is it going to be? So, this episode is so very dumb.
Yeah, I was going to say not good. I was nicer.
You were nicer, but it's like, it's so dumb. Because the problem is, all right, they try to compare it to the last episode with the Reaper. But that is a completely different situation.
Or as Hotch said, and look how well that turned out.
Well, yes, I know. The thing is, to a certain extent, right? And this is why the episode has a problem. This is the giant problem at the core of the episode. Yeah. Aaron is on the road. He gets the call. He doesn't know where Haley is. He can't reach her. She has been kidnapped by the Reaper, right? Mm-hmm. And, I mean, we've talked before about how stupid she was. We're not going to victim blame now, but it was her fault that she's dead. I slipped that in. I probably shouldn't have. No, I know. It's terrible, but it's 100%
true. Slap your hand for me.
But anyway, the point I was getting at was, right? He is in a situation where his wife and child are being kidnapped by a guy who is on a suicide run, who doesn't expect to get out of this alive. Mm-hmm. And he knows that if he sends a SWAT team to his house, man is going to kill his family. 100%. He knows that his only possible chance, and he knows it's only a chance, is to go there himself.
Yep.
And that's his only chance. And the problem with this episode is there are zero stakes.
Yeah.
We can talk about the extent to which he wants revenge on Foyette. And I mean, absolutely, he does want, he wants to kill Foyette, right? No one is denying that. To a certain extent, that is what's motivating him. But fundamentally, if he calls the cops, his family is dead. Mm-hmm. And we know those are the stakes.
Yeah.
By comparison, there are zero stakes in this episode. There are none.
No.
Because the moment he figures out that Lance Henriksen is in the Nightmare on Elm Street house, that's why the house has a red door. It's a reference to Nightmare mm-hmm. on Elm Street. I don't know if Matt Gubler mentioned it in the episode. But, I mean, that's his horror movie nerddom. That's why it has a big red door. It's a reference to Nightmare on Elm Street. Right? The minute he realizes where it is, he can just call a SWAT team and have them arrest Lance Henriksen.
He just has to tell the rest of the team.
Yes. There's no reason not to.
Yeah. There's no reason not to because there's no stake. The only stakes are that they don't, that he
whether
knows
or not he gets personal vengeance.
Yeah.
And that's not something I can get on board with.
Well, the thing is that they needed that for that line where Derek refuses to kill him.
Right, yeah.
And that means that Derek has changed.
He's changed and grown and blah, 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 blah.
Blah, 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 yeah.
But fundamentally, this whole exit doesn't make sense because Derek is in no way, shape, or form responsible for the death of this guy's son.
No.
There is no way you can justify.
I can't even figure out how this guy could think.
No. He's like, you're the last FBI agent to visit him in jail, and then he died, so I'm blaming you for his death. Why?
Yeah.
No, and the thing is, if Derek had killed the guy in the first episode of the season, all of, like, Lance Henriksen's motivation, absolutely, I completely understand it. But he had no connection to this man.
No.
Derek had no involvement in that man's son's death. There's absolutely no reason for him wanting to target Derek. And all they had to do was change it so the clown face killer from the first episode, like, pulled a gun on Derek. Derek wrestled. He got shot. He's in hospital. He's badly injured. He's dying. He gives the sinister message to Derek about the Dirty Dozen while he's on his deathbed, and then he dies. That way you set up the rest of the episode exactly the same, the rest of the season exactly the same. The only difference is Derek is actually responsible for this man's death, And so his dad has a reason to have a vendetta. But because Derek had zero involvement in the guy's death, like, none of this lands. It's just, you don't buy any of it.
Yeah, it doesn't, no, it doesn't land. They think it will land.
Yeah.
Because they think it's good enough. It doesn't matter. They want to tell you that this guy is crazy with grief or whatever and is blaming Derek unreasonably. And it doesn't matter. He's got an E-Day fix that yeah. Derek is responsible for this. And nothing is going to change his mind. And they want you to think he's crazy. That ain't how Lance played it.
Nope. Because nobody gave that message to Lance Henriksen.
Obviously not. The guy is perfectly...
Yep. 100% rational about every point.
Everything,
he's like,
every point, except that he thinks Derek did it. And as you say, the fix for this episode would have had to have occurred in the first episode.
Yeah. And the question is, did they plan it out that far, right?
Well, I don't think they knew Derek was leaving at the beginning of the episode.
At the beginning of the season.
And then they had to quickly kind of, you know, put together something and decided they would take this. And of course, in typical Criminal Minds fashion, don't ever bother caring whether or not it makes sense. I mean, why
would you're right. There's zero setup. It's crazy because there's zero setup for this the entire season. They spent so much time with the hitman and the NSA and the dark web stuff, but this, there's nothing to it, you know?
Yeah, well,
there's absolutely, like, this just comes out of nowhere, and then when you hear what his motivation is, it's like, you didn't set this up at all.
No, and as I said, the setup would have had to have occurred, like you said, in the very first episode. But I don't think they knew Derek was leaving, and so they just pulled that out. And it doesn't matter to them whether it makes sense.
Yeah, that's true.
This was supposed to be a second showcase for Derek.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not as good as the first one.
No. And I think it's an interesting, like, I want you to listen to the first commentary. This commentary was not as interesting.
Right.
The fates of Savannah and her baby hang in the balance. Well, I'm not so sure. Like, yeah. I'm not kind of, the baby is 33 weeks. I'm going, okay, they can C-section that baby out.
Yeah.
It was no trouble at 33 weeks.
Yeah. That's an 8-month baby. The baby's going to be fine.
The baby is going to be fine, so there's nothing there, because he didn't shoot through the uterus.
No, he pointedly avoided damaging the baby with his shot.
And basically, and if he's not going to damage the baby with his shot, he obviously clearly didn't want to kill her either.
Yeah.
So
no, he just wanted to put their lives at risk to make Derek, because he could have killed him easily. Yeah, he wanted to make him come after him.
So he could.
And then it gets legit ridiculous because he doesn't tie Derek up. And I wrap my head around, like, I try to figure out, why is he not tying Derek up? And it's so the rest of the episode can happen. But it's like...
Yeah, that's the only reason.
Like, he's a murderer, he's got a plan, blah, 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 and he hasn't in any way restricted or tied Derek up at all. And I'm like, you watch it, you're like, why is he not taking even the most basic of precautions,
like
when feeling with a giant muscle-bound man 30 years younger than him?
And why doesn't Derek go at him earlier when he knows there's only one bullet in the gun?
He knows, exactly. He tells him there's only one bullet in the gun. Well, just grab the gun then. And the worst part is, he's like,
one in six chances of dying.
I know, because he spins the cylinder. But the even worse part is, he said that the minute he walked in the door, he knew the guy was bluffing because there wasn't a landline in the house. And I'm like, first off,
that bugged the hell out of me.
Yes, first off, you're not a very good landlord if you don't have this house wired with a landline. But more importantly than that, like, he says, I knew right away that there was no landline in the house. And I'm like, well, yeah, but...
Then why aren't you ending this?
Why aren't you ending this immediately? Why are you playing along if you knew there was no threat?
There's no reason to play along. There's no nothing here. It was. And the thing that bugged me about the landline, I'm going, even if Morgan, okay, had not wired his houses with the potential for landline, all Joseph had to do, yeah, right? Because he'd rented the place.
Yeah.
So all he had to do was phone up the local telephone company and ask them to put in a landline.
Yeah. They wouldn't have, they're not legally required to tell Derek they're doing that, are they?
No. Because he would have just,
you're
gone,
a landlord, you know.
Well, I mean, no, it's simply because he would talk. Derek obviously was not hands-on. He had it dealt. He
went through it. They actually specifically say that he owns these properties, he renovates them, and then he turns it all over entirely to a leasing company.
Yeah, a management company.
Sorry, a management company.
So they the management company takes care of everything, and that would include. But if there was no phone line in there, then you have every right to have a phone line put in.
Absolutely.
You know, it's not damaging particularly the property. So, no, I mean, that
line. That scene is ridiculous.
Then again, this is Kirsten and Erica, and probably they don't even know that landlines exist.
Well, no, but the weird part is they do the whole thing with a landline. I don't even know why Lance Henriksen does the fake out with the landline. Like, can't he just have a cell phone sitting there?
Yeah, and it's an old phone.
Yeah, and he's got like this old phone from the 80s. And I know, I'm sure that's Matt Gutman. Oh, yeah, or maybe the 70s.
It's like the 70s because, like, I've got the phone I own, right?
Yeah.
Which is a Bell Vista or whatever Vision.
Yeah, from the first
hotel
generation when they put, you know, view so screens on phones and auto dial on phone and blah, blah, blah.
It's 30 years old. It's
so you're right.
50, and it has got a screen. It's got everything, and it's like 30 years old.
Yeah. So the idea that he would have this, like, phone from the 70s in a phone, like, he brought a phone to fake this, and it's a phone from the 70s? Like, where did Lance Henriksen even get that phone?
I can't even, it might even be a phone from the 60s. Like,
who knows?
I'm trying to think even, like,
and I'm sure this is a thing of
Matt Gubler
wanting to have a cool old looking phone in the episode. But it actually does make you wonder. It's like, where did the character get that?
Yeah. I mean, I looked at it and I went, what? And he's got all these screens?
Yeah, where he's hacked into the
hospital system.
The hospital
but he's
system.
Got his old,
I know.
I don't even know where he would find one of those.
But the landline thing is so upsetting because it makes you think, what do you call it, that Derek, again, should not have been wasting his time with this guy, right? Like, your wife, well, your fiance, is in horrible danger, right?
She's gonna have to go into surgery because they're gonna do a C-section, and you're out here
screwing around with this guy?
Oh, I hated this episode.
It's not a good episode.
As much as I like Derek, I hated this episode.
Yeah, it's a terrible episode, especially because all you had to do to fix it, and I know this is not Erica and, Kirsten's strong suit, but it's like, I hate that I have to tell you this. Make it about psychology. Like, that's all you have to do. So he goes in. He's like, I've got people in the thing that are going to kill your friends. There's no way to get around the big problem, which is there are no stakes, and he could have just surrounded the place with a SWAT team, right? There's no way around that.
No.
But once he is there, once he has chosen vengeance, okay, what you can do is you can have him make that claim and have him cell phone there, and then have Derek, via the process of spending time with and talking to this guy, figure out that he doesn't actually have associates and become convinced that it's all a bluff. And then make the move. But that moment where they have him say, oh, I knew all along, that's what killed this episode for me. Like, the episode is fatally flawed as its core, because there's no reason for any of this to be happening, right? There's just no reason for him to do any of this because there are zero stakes. If he doesn't go along with Lance Henriksen's scheme, nothing happens. Right? Nothing bad happens if he doesn't go along with his scheme. Right? So, if you take away all the stakes and you just say, okay, Derek is 100% motivated by personal revenge. It's a scummy thing for him to be and do, but at least that's a motivation that makes sense to us.
Who is in surgery.
Oh, no, it makes him look like a terrible person. I'm not saying it's forgivable.
Yeah, it's Derek. It's what Derek. Else
he's
do
bad. He's a bad guy. Yeah, we know that. But at least then I understand, right? So yeah. He's just motivated by personal vengeance. But to then, right, add in this thing where also he was just screwing with the guy of the whole episode. All you have to do is give him a cell phone. Don't bother with this whole, you know, old-timey Bakelite phone or whatever. Give him a cell phone, have him make his claim, and then Derek spends the episode talking with him and becomes convinced through word choice, through demeanor, through the inconsistent way he talks about stuff, right? That Lance Henriksen is lying, and 100% he knows there's no one on the other end of that line when he calls, and then Derek makes his move. Like, that, at least then it makes sense, you know?
Well, there were a million times Derek could have made a move because, as I said, the guy only had one bullet in the gun. Oh,
yeah, that's a whole other... But, I mean, if he at any point believed that someone was pointing a gun at his friends, then you understand Derek's hesitation.
Yeah.
But if he for the entire time knew, then none of this episode, like, none of this episode needed to happen. If he knew the whole time... This whole episode didn't need to happen. And given
Derek's... end of this episode.
Well, obviously the end of it, but you know what I mean. None of the plot of this episode needed to happen, which is what makes this so frustrating, because it's like, this is Derek's exit episode. It's the last episode. They went and they got Lance Henriksen to be in this episode. The star of the, you know, one of the best shows ever about a profiler. Millennium. Container of what I would argue is the best single hour ever made about cops hunting a serial killer, The Mikado.
Yeah.
Season 2, episode, I think, 13 of Millennium is, you don't have to have ever watched an episode of Millennium. Just sit down and watch this episode and be taken away by the best hour of television you've ever seen.
And then you would understand more about our complaints.
Yes.
About
how good they could be doing.
How good Criminal Minds could have been, as opposed to... There are rational reasons why we get so pissed off
it's
at
true,
the writing and inconsistencies of this show. Because it is possible, within the context of the idea of this show, because profiling, whatever. But within it, you could have made a lot better episodes.
Yeah,
and it would have still, the fans would have still loved it if episodes had actually been good.
Yeah, I think that's 100% true.
Because the cast is actually quite good. But, you know, in terms of, now, let's not talk about that. Can we talk about the thing that pissed me off more than anything else in the world?
I can't wait to find out what it is.
In this whole episode, JJ.
Please. Yeah, really? Why is that? Because she tells Derek and doesn't. Oh my god.
Yeah, well, I didn't agree with this. And then when Hotch says to him, "You have disrupted this team."
Yep.
No, you have, Aaron.
No, he hasn't.
No. And I keep thinking, okay, so that exchange means that all the nice things you said two episodes ago in your commentary weren't really true, that this is a truer portrayal of how you feel about Thomas Gibson / Aaron Hotchner that came out in that tweet.
In that moment,
4 months later.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I watched that, but it was JJ. I'm going, well, I don't agree. I'm sorry.
It's not your place to decide whether you agree, and your decision
to
keep this quiet and do this and keep this to yourself almost gets Derek killed to no good result.
Yeah. I mean, she does tell Aaron later.
Oh, yeah. But she still made a crucial mistake and risked Derek's life for no reason.
For no reason. She wants Derek to go out after 6 months and after what he's been through. These people are so freaking irresponsible. And whatever.
It's coming back to her own desperate need for vengeance. Like, she's still PTSDing pretty goddamn hard at this point.
Yeah.
And she's like, I murdered people to feel better. Maybe it'll help Derek. Jesus Christ, woman. You're supposed to be a psychologist.
She's not. She was the paper shuffler.
She was a functionary who then went to profiling school.
Yes. Nobody said she ever had training
for this job. Yeah.
No, she never did.
Yeah, but then again, the founder of profiling was a gym teacher, so there you go.
Yeah, but at least he was a real FBI guy.
That's true. At least he was a guy who was out in the field dealing with
murders. And he'd been in the military.
Yeah, but in the military, he was a gym teacher.
Yeah, I know, but...
I just thought it was funny to mention. But no, you're right. It's completely unprofessional what she does.
It was 100% totally. I was completely unprofessional.
Pissed
off that. And I don't think Matthew... Like, it's really funny that Matthew Gray Gubler, like, he does these commentaries.
Yeah.
And you can tell the ones that he really cares about. I don't know that he much cared about this episode. Although,
so did he just, like, was he happy to do the episode because he got to meet Lance Henriksen and that's it?
Well, he would never say that. He's
Well, of course not. He's a professional.
But, yes. Oh, by the way, I also found out somewhere along the line, in either this commentary or the other commentary, but maybe it was the other commentary because Derek talks about the three guys that are directing his episodes. And he talks about that. And it turns out that one of the reasons Matthew Gray Gubler was around, he went to directing school.
Really?
Yeah. While he was on Criminal Minds.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Makes sense. I mean, he's great at it. So I get that,
And he talks about, like, what I like about Matthew Gray Gubler is that he really doesn't have the massive ego, right?
Yeah.
And he doesn't make all of those. He makes fun of some things and then other things. And he was talking about the cinematography, and I actually I went back and looked, and I'm going, because there's a scene, I guess, with, I don't know. I can't even remember now. But there's in the hospital room there, the flowers in between the two of them. This potted. And he said, I'd like to say that I thought about that great shot. He says, but I'm sure
where they're where they're broken up. By the flowers.
The two of them
the
are separate, and there's the flowers in the background, right?
Yeah,
and
background,
it's this beautiful, and there's slats. And he says he always likes looking through doorways and things. That's one of his directing things.
Yeah.
But he talks about that. He said it's framed so perfectly. And he said,
definitely not me.
He said, I am sure it's, and he named the guy who's the cinematographer.
The DP, the DP,
And he said, I'm sure that he saw the flowers and told somebody to move them so that they would be right in that position.
Middle of the frame. Oh, and that's the thing. He doesn't. I mean, we talk a lot about how much we love him just as an artist. But to know that he also doesn't have an ego about it. Oh, my God.
Somebody else
makes me love him even more. He's happy to give.
Okay, I've got to tell you two more things.
OK, please.
There was one, you know, when Derek opens the door, red door, right?
Of course.
And then goes in.
Yeah.
37 shots.
37 takes?
Takes. 37 takes.
Oh my God. For that one shot.
Matt wasn't happy with any. Like, he just.
Oh my God.
There was something he said, or you do.
He became Robert Altman for one scene.
or, you know, a car would drive by. Or
we'd
do a shot and then something. And we do know that one.
Oh, no, we've all been there. Anyone who's worked in a set where you had to shoot outside has had that experience. Yes.
Even on a Sunday afternoon at 2 o'clock when nobody's out.
I know.
Anyway, never mind. So he was talking about that. And then he talked about what he did
Right,
to Shamar Moore. Because he wanted something from Shamar Moore, and I guess Shamar Moore wasn't giving it to him.
Oh.
Okay. In those shots with, so it's the shots with Lance Henriksen and Shamar Moore in the house.
Yeah.
And when Lance Henriksen's planning on shooting him all the time, right?
Yeah.
And so apparently they had rehearsed it. And then Matthew took Lance Henriksen aside and said, I want you to fumble the shots. I want you to do it off or take too long for the to pull the trigger.
Really?
Yeah. And he said you could just see it. He said that he wanted Shamar Moore to get sort of angry and frustrated.
Angry and anxious and fed up with what's happening.
Yeah, yeah.
And he wasn't getting there, so he had Lance Henriksen screw up. That's amazing.
And consistently screw up. And of course, I guess Shamar Moore is one of those actors that isn't going to say anything like, because, and so Matthew told him afterwards.
Right.
It happened, but, and of course, he looked exactly the way Matthew Gray Cooper wanted him to, but he had to get Lance Henriksen to.
It is weird that I guess this is maybe, I don't know. That he would have a much easier time getting that Thomas Gibson had a much easier time getting that performance out of him. Weird, isn't it?
Well, partly I think, yeah, and what he said, what Shamar Moore said about Thomas Gibson was,
yeah,
Thomas Gibson must have played to probably Shamar Moore's ego to some extent,
right?
But because Shamar Moore says about Thomas Gibson's directing, he has nothing but good things to say about it,
right?
Nothing but good things,
which is good to hear.
Yeah, it must have been right after. They must have done it pretty quickly
after the episode. Yeah,
and he had seen it, and and of course it's a wonderful episode. So, but Thomas Gibson, he says, well, he said, you know, he said it helps that he's an actor as well.
Oh,
because he says then he understands the process I'm going through.
Right. And that's interesting. That's
my process and everything. So I suspect Thomas Gibson, no wonder he was sweating. And apparently, you know, he put Shamar Moore goes in. He said he's put so much work into this and everything. And he said he was so different. And he was so, you know, he was so worried about getting it just right and making sure that everything about this episode
was just right. Perfect.
Was perfect, and it was my perfect episode, right? So Shamar Moore does understand that that episode is probably the high point of his
time on the show.
And the second would then be, what was it called? Was that
Profiler Profiled?
Profiler Profiled, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So you have, that would be his second best episode.
Oh, absolutely.
So,
yeah,
no, so he had nothing but good things to say about Thomas Gibson. It stuns
me. Yeah, and it's so weird given what happened just months later.
Well, so yeah, but, you know, he's an actor. I'm not going to say, I will not tell you that I listened to that and said that that Shamar Moore is, I don't know how to put it, but all he is focused on is his acting and getting better. And he still has the acting coach he had at the beginning, and he clearly needs clear direction that has to be of a specific type. And I suspect Thomas Gibson knew how to do it. Matthew Gray Gubler didn't.
Right.
Because Matthew Gray Gubler he's probably, you know, I mean, he takes this role. I'm not sure, you know, like he clearly likes acting. He probably likes directing better. Matthew Gray Gubler probably doesn't do the same. He doesn't put the
He doesn't know. He doesn't put the same kind of energy into his acting that he does into his directing. I think that's clear.
And he did, and Matthew Gray Goop, and so he, but he didn't know how to deal with Shamar Moore and to get,
whereas by comparison Thomas Gibson can handle him much better.
Yeah, and that may also be a reason why he wouldn't like him, because
yes,
he's a director that handles you, right? And, yeah. and but he took this, apparently Matthew says that, you know, I guess Shamar was okay with it afterwards, but Lance Hendrickson just did it, you know. I mean, he took Lance Hendrickson aside and said, look, I'm not getting, he must have just said, look, I'm not getting the stuff I need for this guy, so what should
we do? Oh, well, Lance Hendrickson's a pro. That's what it comes down to.
What Matthew said was, he said Shamar Moore, he said you could see him just getting angrier because he couldn't figure out where his lines were and what his hits, like where his cues.
Yeah, where his cue
was. His cues were all screwed up because it wasn't the thing. Because
Lance Hendrickson was screwing up the flubbing the lines and the moments. Oh, that makes me so happy.
Yeah, I'm just cracking. I'm cracking up.
Hey, got it on screen. That's all that matters, right?
Yeah, all that matters when you're making a film is if you get things on screen. And maybe it's a little bit of Spencer Reed getting back at him. for 11 years.
A lifetime of 11 years of bullying. Yeah.
So Matthew, for his character Spencer, took, you know...
And in the show, the way he makes up for it is by naming his son Spencer.
I don't even want to go there.
Yeah, we'll talk about that another time. He has a brief cameo in season 12, and that's where we're going to talk about how shitty their relationship is.
Yeah, and Matthew also talked about money. Because there were things he wanted to do, and, well, they just...
No was not able to do. Okay, so he knows, like, visually, this was not up to snuff for what he is known for.
He talked about a few things he wanted to do. He says, but, well, you know. But this is the second time. And you question, right, why he kind of leaves. He's not around so much in the next bunch of years. Like, as I said, you know, there are people here I would like to talk to. Not as...
Very much.
Because, not because I'm, like, a fan.
I want. But there's questions you need answered.
There are questions I need answered. And there are a few people like Thomas Gibson and maybe, well, Matthew Gray Gubler, I suspect.
Definitely.
You know, I mean, those are the ones I want to talk to. But you should hear Shamar Moore. I mean, my God, he is a corporate actor. Yeah, and he's been with CBS, and I guess they have treated him extremely well.
Well, I think that what it comes down to is when you've had 20 years of someone signing your paychecks, a very clear relationship is going to develop between the two.
Yeah, and I think that I do think that it's a you know, like, I don't think he's probably ever had any troubles.
Yeah.
You know, but he's got a particular... maybe I will watch SWAT at some point.
It'll just be interesting to see what he does. Is he stretching himself, or is he just...
No, I don't... Well, I mean...
Don't prejudge. That's my point. Don't prejudge.
No, but I've seen the... I've seen
clips, and you've seen ads. I know, but it's not the same.
Well, the ads for it. Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
But it's not the same. But to do that, you have to watch 5 or 6 episodes.
Well, like, which
you can't,
we might
just pick one.
You know, we're out of Criminal Minds, right? Like, we have time to watch some other. No, I mean, I'm just saying, there's not going to be any more episodes of Criminal Minds made, so we do have time to look into this. But that's something we'll talk about later. Right now, we'll just get to the end of the episode, which is, I mean, it's sweet. They do the best they can to make it as sweet as possible, and it is sweet. They got the kid. They've got him and Aaron talking about their various kids. He's finally a father. You've got a beat with him and Penelope. Like, there's good stuff right at the end. And the thing is, it's not that it's particularly, you know, effectively written. It's just they are drawing on the bank of 11 years of goodwill for these characters for those scenes. Yeah. But I'm not going to say they're bad scenes, you know? And it's not like anything particularly insightful happens. There's no real moment where we see Derek, like, because Derek doesn't really learn anything, and he doesn't really change as a person. It's just, he's like, well, finally, I'm happy I've got a kid now. But it's like, he doesn't change as a person or learn anything, because he still does this unbelievably stupid thing that puts his own life at risk for no reason.
And almost misses the birth of his baby.
Well, Lance Hendrickson could have shot him the minute he walked in the door.
Yeah.
He didn't know that wasn't going to happen.
Like, and then JJ would have been responsible.
100% responsible. So it's like the character doesn't learn anything. The character doesn't change or grow, but we get a fond farewell. And I think on some level, that's just what the fans want. And it's what I wanted. And it is a nice goodbye to the character.
Yes.
Even if
the episode it is,
you know, even if it's honestly a pretty bad episode, I'm not going to call it Matt Gubler's worst episode. But it might be.
Because even the other one that was sort of, as I told you, remember that was where he complained about all the things he wanted to do and there was no money.
There was no money because they spent all the money on the JJ episode.
Something, yeah, or 200 or 100.
Yeah, 200 is the JJ episode. Yeah. They spent all the money in the JJ episode, so he didn't have any cash to do any of the stuff he wanted to do. Yeah. But the thing is, it's like, there are three things you want out of a Matt Gubler episode. All right, you want a cameo by a horror icon. You want really interesting use of music, and you want a couple of interesting visuals. Right?
Yes.
And hopefully to embrace a fairy tale aesthetic through the use of the visuals. And this episode is one for three.
Okay, wait till I tell you this one.
Please.
There was one scene, I don't even remember where it was. He actually wrote something for the saxophone.
What?
Well, first of all, he filmed 57 minutes.
So 15 minutes of this episode got cut.
Yeah. Okay.
So his director's cut was 57 minutes long. Wow.
Yeah. Anyway. So. And then he talks about how he had written music for a saxophone. I guess he plays a saxophone, and he did play it. This would be in the editing room,
of course.
And he said, it just didn't fit. So he said, I had to pull it out. Well, no, but I'm going. Yeah, this is a guy who understands that sometimes you gotta pull. It's like pulling my borderline disorder chapter out of my dissertation. Like, you may be fond of something, but if it
but
doesn't,
that doesn't
work,
mean it works.
Doesn't work. And you just pull it. And, like, it makes me appreciate him even more.
That's the thing. And it's like, now that the show's over, I check his IMDb page every now and then, hoping he's going to announce that he's directing a movie. And I haven't seen it yet, but. Fingers crossed that happens soon, because I really want him to pursue what is clearly his passion, especially since, and this is the thing that blows me away, he didn't direct an episode in the last season. That's crazy. All right, so that is the final Derek episode of Criminal Minds. I'm shocked, you're shocked, and it's very weird that there's still, four episodes left in the season, or five episodes left in the season.
Four
episodes of the season when Derek's gone, but yeah, Derek's gone, which raises the question, what are we going to be covering next week?
Well, what are we going to do? 2 and 2 or 3 and 1?
3 and 1 so we can look back at the season. So yeah, 19, 20, 21.
Okay, tribute.
Which is?
Emily coming back.
Oh, of course. Right, the serial killer groupie. Yes.
Yeah. And then Inner Beauty.
Which one is Inner Beauty? The cut-up faces, women in tanks of water. Yeah, got it. No, I remembered.
I remember it. Actually, when you said that, and then I'm reading Killer Determined to Mold His Victims into His Vision of the Idea.
I remember. Cut-up
faces. Yeah, I remembered it too. And then Devil's Backbone.
And yeah, that's the Silence of the Lambs episode.
Yeah,
and
Frances Fisher.
Frances Fisher. And we're going to have a lot to say about that episode.
And Felix Enrique Gala is the one who...
we're going to have a lot to say about that episode. All right, so that's your homework for next week. Expect us to not talk much about the first two episodes to save as much time as possible to talk about the Silence of the Lambs episode. Yes. Oh, boy. Because they already, to their credit, they already did Red Dragon, so they had to do Silence of the Lambs eventually.
Yeah.
All right, so that's that. We will see you back here next week for that. For now, if you have any questions for us, if you have any comments, if you'd like to suggest any profiling-related fiction, please drop us a line at profilingcriminalminds@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you. If you are listening to this on some sort of a podcast client, be sure to give us a rating, because that helps other people find the show. We will see you back here next week for that, and... oh my god, I just realized we only have 2 weeks left before we have to start watching Beyond Borders. Oof. That's going to be a ride, people, so gird yourself against that. Because it's coming fast. We will see you back here for that, but until then, I'm going to say au revoir.
And have a good weekend.
Profiling Criminal Minds is a member of the Kinks Podcasting Network.